This is a CBC podcast.
Tell our listeners how we know each other.
Okay. Well, we go way back, Nicola. Way, way, way back.
How far back are you willing to talk about?
Well, I mean, we went to the same school.
I'm Nicola McLeod. That's my friend Lucas MacArthur. Details around when and where we first met could be argued, but basically, we've known each other for at least 25 years.
Yes.
So, Lucas, tell me, what is the question you're hoping we can answer this week?
So, this question, Nicola, really stemmed from something I heard like about 2 weeks ago when they were talking about Lucy Maud Montgomery's 150th birthday. And I started thinking about her impact on PEI and, of course, Anne Green Gables. And what struck me was, do I really know why Anne Green Gables is so popular? I know she has such an impact on our province and has such an impact on the world, but how did that happen?
Lucas and I both grew up here on PEI, so rite of passage, as teenagers, we worked in jobs in tourism. And because it's PEI, whether you're in a restaurant or a gift shop or an actual tourist information center, you become an ambassador for everything and anything Anne of Green Gables. I will never forget the first time a person cried in front of me while talking about Lucy Maud Montgomery.
What I can picture is a summer job I had once. So many of them come up to you and say, "Where does Anne live? Where does Anne live?" And you have to really look at them and you can see it in their eyes when you let them down and say, "Well, Anne's not real."
How many people would you say you've broken the news to that Anne is not a real person?
Oh, I think at this point it's more than you can count on your hands.
I also worked in Cavendish. I've also had to break that news to some people, but I think the story, in some ways, people connect with it so strongly, maybe they don't even stop to think that it's fiction.
Yeah, and I mean, it is a relatable story. It's based in PEI, and I think Lucy Maud did such a great job of describing Prince Edward Island, and so people can envision themselves there. They can envision the story. What I'm excited to learn about is also how people relate to this story. And I think that it's not just a tool that we use to get people to come visit PEI. I think that there is some real stories of people and how they connect to the story. And I'm interested to find out more. And hopefully you can uncover that for me.
I accept this task. If you didn't grow up steeped in that Anne mythology, it's a story about a girl named Anne, Anne with an E. She comes to PEI to live with two unmarried siblings, Matthew and Marilla. The only problem, Matthew and Marilla, they wanted a boy. They need help on the farm. What they get is a chatty, boisterous, imaginative girl with red braids. She convinces them to keep her. And along the way, she wins over the hearts of everyone in Avonlea. It's heartwarming, it's wholesome, and for me, I've come back to that story in the last few years. A deeply curious girl who talks too much. Now, that's something I can relate to. But I don't think it's correct to assume every Islander feels that way. So what do Islanders know about Anne and Lucy Maud Montgomery? Let's go to Charlottetown and ask some.
All I know is she's a fellow ginger and lived in a greenhouse.
Yeah, I don't know really much about her either. I just know that she's very popular in PEI. Tourists like her a lot.
Where did you move to Canada from?
India.
Did you know anything about Anne of Green Gables? You've never heard of it?
Never heard of it.
It's a book.
I don't read books. I don't like books. Sorry.
No, not at all, unfortunately.
Have you learned anything about Anne? Like, do you know what it is now that you live here?
Nope.
Just no idea. Great. Thanks, Aaron.
No problem.
I used to live in Alberta, and even then we used to watch documentaries on her and how she was raised in PEI. I think why so much people are drawn to PEI because of her is because she kind of is like the PEI, the mascot. No. Just kind of like a tourist type of thing to come see everyone, you know what I mean? It's just a historical monument.
I know that she was bullied in class and called carrots and had her braids yanked.
The hair, I knew about it and I knew it was a PEI staple, but not too much. But then when I moved here, oh boy, did I learn.
what did you learn? What do you feel you've learned about Anne since coming here?
She's a really big staple on the island. I mean, we've got the shops, the shows, like so many Anne of Green Gables centered things. And I didn't realize how big of a thing it was around the world. I kind of thought it was kind of just a Canada condensed thing. But all around the world, people are coming here to see Anne.
Speaking of those shops, I eventually find myself in front of Anne of Green Gables Chocolates. I go inside, I meet Sneha Kunal. She's the manager of that Queen Street location.
I've seen the tourists that we get in this particular store is like a big fan of Anne's. Like they read books, they watch shows and everything. They really love Anne. Basically, that's the reason why I think it's attracted.
Sneha is from Nepal, and she didn't know anything about Anne before moving to PEI either.
And I used to think that myself, that Anne was actually a real person. And when I started working here, and then only I knew that it was actually a fictional character, which was crazy. Seriously, when I came in here, I thought like everywhere it was Anne, and I thought she was actually a person.
Have you read any of the books or gotten into the movies, the musical, anything since you arrived here?
I actually watched the Anne show. I haven't read the books myself because I'm not a book person, but I've watched the show and it's pretty good actually. And I can see the craze, what's going on, right?
I'm really glad I met Sneha when I was out because she's one of these people Lucas and I have met who thought Anne Shirley was a real person. Even if she is just fictional, her mark is still everywhere on PEI. In Charlottetown, there are two musicals based on Anne's stories. And pretty much every place Montgomery ever went on Prince Edward Island is a historic site. I'm not joking. The house she was born in, her cousin's home, the house that inspired Green Gables, the school where she briefly taught, and my favorite, a church she attended a handful of times, was eventually moved to Cavendish. It's now a burger restaurant. I wish Lucy Maud Montgomery could see the Burger Church. But as someone who has been surrounded by this my entire life, I am left wondering why all the fanfare. What makes someone fly across the world to see some old houses where a woman spent some time?
Anne of Green Gables is a great work of literature, not a great Canadian novel, not a great piece of children's literature, not a great novel by a woman for women, just a great piece of literature because it contains all of those things that we think of that make up great literature, places that feel alive, characters that resonate, language that is beautiful. All of those things are in this novel and other works by Montgomery.
If you want to know about Lucy Maud or Anne, look no further than Kate Scarth. She's the chair of Ellen Montgomery Studies at an institute also in Montgomery's name at UPEI.
Montgomery, of course, writes about a very specific time and place. So late 19th century, early 20th century, Prince Edward Island primarily, but also other places. So she's writing from a very particular place, but she writes about themes and people that have universal appeal. So imagination, community, friendship, beauty, all of these things that we probably think of when we think of Anne of Green Gables. And so there's this universal resonance that has had appeal all over the world in different times, places, cultures.
It's funny, even as you're talking, I'm like getting goosebumps even just like as you're saying it. It's so fascinating as an adult, you identify so strongly with this work that is over 100 years old that you think might, as a modern person, as a modern woman, might not apply to me. But, you know, I can say as a rather chatty young girl who was often told that she needed to be quiet, be polite, not speak out, not be have this brash, loud personality. And Anne is a woman who is often defying a lot of that social expectation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think you've really hit the nail on the head there. She's this spunky, resilient, bright child. Whether you identify her with her or you kind of see her as this aspirational character, I think the character of Anne is so important. And I hear that again and again in my role as the chair of Montgomery Studies. I talk to a lot of fans, readers, scholars, people who work in the heritage and tourism industries. The appeal of that character comes up again and again. It's so interesting, too, like the child childhood part of it, because a lot of people first read Anne in childhood. And so her story gets kind of woven into their stories as people grow up with Anne. But one thing that I find interesting is how many people who love Anne in Montgomery come to the character and the novels later in life. And one of the things that comes up is how people turn to Montgomery at these kind of important life junctures. So we got stories about mothers kind of being up nursing their babies through the night and wanting company, so they read Anne. Or people thinking about, you know, Anne's resilience and starting this new life and how that's impacted their own thinking about moving to a new country or starting a new job. And of course, there are stories of people moving to Prince Edward Island because of Anne as well.
And Kate identifies with Montgomery too. Her favorite book is Anne of the Island, where Anne goes to a fictionalized version of Dalhousie University on the mainland. But in this case, it's called Redmond College. Now, Kate is from Newfoundland, a different island. But she also went to Dal. So did Montgomery. And something that Kate says people often get wrong about Lucy Maud Montgomery from a distance is that her stories are happy-go-lucky or that they're written for children. But Kate says that's not the case. And Lucy Maud's own life is proof of that. She struggled with her mental health. She had depression. And in 2008, on the 100th anniversary of the publishing of Anne of Green Gables, her granddaughter revealed something that had been rumored and speculated upon. Lucy Maud Montgomery died by suicide.
Montgomery creates a mindset, a way of looking at the world. Her own life, as many of us now know, was very difficult, especially towards the end. But people like Mary Rubio and Elizabeth Waterston have talked about how Montgomery takes these difficult moments and transforms them in her writing. And so she gives kind of Anne a more positive version of difficult moments. I mentioned already that Anne was a fictional Dalhousie student, and Montgomery went to Dal for a year, but Montgomery was very frustrated. She only got to go to university for a year. She gives Anne that full degree. Anne gets to go to university. She graduates. She has this rich social life. So that's just one example of how Montgomery takes something that she wasn't totally satisfied with in her own life and transforms it. And so I guess that gets back to your question. Some readers see Montgomery's writing, see Anne of Green Gables as an escape from their own difficulties, but then others see it as kind of a guide for how to get through difficult moments, because we have to remember that, you know, Anne is coming from a very difficult past. She's been at an orphanage. She's basically been treated like an indentured servant, taking care of children when she's just a child herself. She's 11 when she comes to Green Gables. So she's already had this very difficult life. And then we just see her come and transform her community, transform Marilla. And I love Margaret Atwood's reading of the novel, how she says that this is really Marilla's story. Marilla is the one who changes because of her interaction with this child, which I think is just so lovely.
All right, time to recap. Why is Anne of Green Gables so famous? Because it's a good book. Regardless of what you know about Lucy Maud Montgomery, she is one of the greats of 20th century literature. Her characters are these brave, fierce heroines who carve their own path, even if the world around them tries to push them towards the straight and narrow. And the fans, they are obsessed. It may wash right over some of us as islanders, but it's actually pretty unusual to grow up in the setting of one of the most beloved books of all time. And that's why people are flocking here. But a question I still have, I connect with Anne because we have a lot in common. We grew up in the same place and have a bit of a flair for drama. But what does someone from a different culture see in Lucy Maud's work when it isn't as close to home? Where are you from?
I'm from China.
Was Anne popular in China before you came here to Canada?
I don't think so. Yeah, because I am interested in PEI, so I watched that TV shows, and I know there's a book, and also there's a movie. The beautiful house and the view of the field they live. Yeah.
I'm originally from China. I moved here a couple years ago. It's a great show I watched when I was younger. It has some really important lessons that my mom tried to instill in me. So I think it's a great historical show that everybody should watch.
Did you watch it in China?
No, when I moved here.
Did you watch it to learn more about PEI?
Yeah.
She's kind of curated the world that she grew up in, that she knew, that she loved, of the North Shore in a particular historical moment, kind of the late 19th century, early 20th century. And she shared that with us. And now lots of people know about that particular time. People are interested in the fashion and the food because of Montgomery. So there's this specific, but then there's also this opening up, I think, into the universal as well in terms of these themes of imagination, friendship that appeal around the world. And I think that both of those things get transplanted to different countries. So the specific of Montgomery's world and that also these universal themes get transplanted around the world. And they're highly adaptable. And it's so interesting to see how in different countries, readers and other people have embraced Anne. Japan is a source of many tourists to PEI who want to come experience Anne. And the story of the first translator of Anne of Green Gables from English into Japanese is such a fascinating story in its own right.
It's the Second World War, and Hanako Moroko is translating Anne of Green Gables into Japanese. She is carrying this manuscript with her as she goes in and out of bomb shelters in Tokyo. And remember, Canada and Japan, they're not on the same side of that war. Anne of Green Gables is an enemy text. But she finished the translation, and it's published in 1952, at a time when post-war Japan is very encouraging of positive Western literature.
Anne is an orphan. There were a lot of orphans in Japan after the war. As we've been talking about, Anne of Green Gables is the story of resilience, of an orphan, of overcoming difficulties and kind of finding new life. In Japan, the text has also been used to teach English. So it's been studied, assigned in the school system. There was a popular anime series in the 1970s that I know was playing a lot on Japanese TV. A lot of people kind of grew up with that kind of on in the background. So a lot of reasons I think that the novel, both in terms of its adaptations and then also connections with a particular culture moment that have made that novel popular. And you also spoke about, you know, being a bubbly, a talkative child. That aspect of Anne really appeals to the Japanese. And as you mentioned, you know, Anne's kind of negotiation of authority, from my reading about Japanese scholars' interpretation of this, there is this appreciation of Anne being bubbly and talkative and pushing back against authority, but not too much. She still exists within kind of a traditional conservative society, which also appeals to the Japanese, that kind of slight negotiation, but not a total radical shift.
Other countries have their own special stories about loving Anne. Brazil is having a bit of a moment right now, thanks to the Anne with an E Netflix series. There's been something like 20 translations of Anne of Green Gables into Brazilian Portuguese since that show first came out. And last year, Kate had a master's student from Brazil named Tashiani visit her, and they talked about, you know, why Brazil. And where they landed is that maybe it's because this newer, modern adaptation provides a more broad cultural context for the work.
It includes indigenous characters. It includes Black characters. It portrays a more positive version of the Acadians than we get in Montgomery's novels. And of course, Black and indigenous characters are not represented in the Anne series. So we get those in the Netflix series. Brazil is a very diverse country. What I find so interesting, though, is someone like Tashiani sees the series, really enjoys the Netflix series, and then goes back to the novel and also really loves that because they're very different.
How do you think you can still honor the original intention of a work while still updating it, like perhaps providing more context around people of color who are present in the story, around indigenous folks who are in the story, having perhaps a more respectful representation of those groups than the world that Montgomery would have lived in at the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. And you know, my answer to that question, being a scholar and not someone who does this kind of adaptation, is just having this solid sense of the spirit of the original text. And again, you know, I kind of keep coming back to these key themes. And then, yeah, thinking about either the larger historical scope that, you know, Montgomery wasn't aware of or wasn't engaging with or had a very particular take on as a Scottish Presbyterian woman and a member of one of the founding in air quotes, families of Cavendish.
Read any book that is over 100 years old, and you'll find elements that certainly won't fly now. but there's also a lot about Montgomery that would slide right into 2024. Kate describes her as a savvy businesswoman, and this would have been at a time before women could even vote. She actually took on the publishing world and sued her own publisher because she thought her royalties were too low. Can someone say Taylor Swift? And like my girl Taylor, she was influential over other creators at the time. While she's super popular in Japan, the first translation of Anne of Green Gables was actually into Swedish. And years later, along came Miss Pippi Longstocking, another wily, non-conforming, freckled orphan with red braids. There's a lot of characters from very famous novels who resonate with people. You don't see someone like Holden Caulfield on a stamp or on a license plate, but you see Anne, the red hair, the pigtails, the little girl sitting on the suitcase. Why has that blown up in a way that maybe other characters haven't?
Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about this too, because part of it I think is just that the red hair is so recognizable, right? Like it's kind of become iconic, and so it's a good calling card for the character, for the book. So I think that that's to have something to do with why Anne is so famous, right? Just so that she is so instantly recognizable. And so, you know, people might come to Montgomery through Anne, love that character, love that novel, but within that novel and then in her other books, her writing, the adaptations, I think it is so important, like you were saying, that people can visit that site, right? And have that pilgrimage, which is really what it is for a lot of people. That all kind of keeps people going and connected to Montgomery over their lives.
Kate, thank you so much. I've been beaming ear to ear through this whole conversation. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, it's been really fun. Thank you, Nicola.
So, Lucas, now that you've heard some of the reasons why Anne is so significant, what do you think?
I'm very surprised. There's so much out there that has made this story so popular, and it's so much bigger than I guess I first thought. I thought it was a good story that people liked, but I didn't realize that it's a good story that people like from across the world and has so many different connections. And just want to say good job, Nicola. You really answered this question. I think our friends are pretty jealous that I'm the first one that gets to be on the pod. I'm so excited to hear more episodes and learn more about this great province that we're so lucky to live in.
And if you, like Lucas, have a question you want answered, send it to goodquestionpei@cbc.ca. I read all of your questions, and I promise they'll get picked even if we didn't go to elementary school together. And if you're enjoying the show, please follow us wherever you get your podcasts. It will make the episode show up in your feed every Wednesday when we drop new episodes. For Good Question PEI, I'm Nicola McLeod. See ya!
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.